Today, I want to play around with, in the space of this, I play around the field of sort of wisdom and impermanence. And part of this comes from a few days ago, I met with the residents at Spirit Rock, and we've been working our way through the Eightfold Path. And the last aspect is wisdom. And how do we access our own wisdom? How do we relate to it? That word can have its own charge. And however we want to define it. And in this context, and today I want to play again with the idea of the, shall we say, the marriage of impermanence and wisdom. And part of this is inspired by a few talks I listened to, Joseph Goldstein's, and I'm such a fan of his. He's, if you haven't checked him out, do so. He's just such a master and a lineage holder for us at Spirit Rock and IMS in Massachusetts, but the his pointing to really when we can, the degree to which we can embody a sense of our of impermanence around us, everything changes, all that is born will pass away, right? That is the truth of this realm. And intellectually it's like I know. And this way that's like me but not me necessarily. Right. We have dear ones, people we love that pass away, that die. And like, yeah, we know intellectually that we're going to die, but there's still a part that's like, maybe, wants to kind of hold on to and live in this place of wanting things to be permanent. And whether it's our own lives or when things, conditions are good, like, it would stay like this and not change. And yet it does always, always, always change. Which is why I find it to be helpful with that. I hopefully you did too, but with those instructions of just watching the mind, it's like, oh, thoughts come and they go. They float in and out. Some really take hold, but being able to have a big enough space to kind of watch again, I've been kind of loving that phrase of like the flotsam and jetsam of our thoughts. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's just sort of, that image of a plastic bag. Plastic bag, a plastic bag floating in the sky. And as I was in the meditation, kind of had that image of like sometimes thoughts are like that. They sort of come from out of nowhere and they pass through. But what the pointings here, whether it's mindfulness of the breath, body sensations, the mind, the feeling tones, it's all in the pointing of, hey, look, it changes. This breath changes, this sensation changes, our physical circumstances changes, this body of ours is always changing. And as we take our seat and work with these foundational practices, it is in the service of understanding all that arises passes away, all that is born will die. This notion of we got a one-way ticket. We're born, and the only way this ends is in death. And how can we embrace this as a way of, okay, so then how do I want to meet each moment? And as I was sort of jokingly, but actually not really, last week talking about it's always Mercury retrograde, how freeing it was to have this notion of, well, nothing's going to work out. It's Mercury retrograde. And how freeing that was, things didn't work out. And I was like, of course, because I'd released the expectation that they would work out. And yet there can be such a conditioning, at least in the dominant culture, like if you work hard and you play by the rules, things will work out. And maybe for a moment or a period of time, but not necessarily. And how to really be able to lean back into these teachings of impermanence of, yeah. It's okay. We haven't done anything wrong. That things are of the nature to come together and of the nature to go away. One thing that can be helpful as a practice, and I go in and out of this being a daily practice for me, but of working with the five recollections. I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There's no way to escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There's no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from the people that I love. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground upon which I stand. Another phrasing that can be helpful is I'm of the nature to grow old. All beings are of the nature to age. I'm not exempt. And Joseph talks about this, of kind of using that tagline of I am not exempt. All things are of the nature to die. I am not exempt. As a way of allowing ourselves to participate, inviting ourselves into the conversation of this time is short. Whatever that means, whether we live to be 110 or whether we live to be 12, that we are all on a limited amount of time. And how do we embrace this again as a teachings of easing our way into wisdom and equanimity? Again, kind of reaching back into last week, this practice of equanimity is in some ways grounded in it's all changing. And we take our seat in the middleness of all that is changing. And sometimes we're like, whew, thank goodness. I know, and I've shared this before when I was going through my divorce, which was terrible. I really leaned into it, but I was like, please let this be over, right? There was some grasping there, to be sure, and some aversion, but this really relaxing into it will not always be that. And when it's less fun, but it's still true. You know, all the conditions here, they're constantly moving in this image. I think it was Joseph shared of this sort of life is this like we're in a waterfall. The water's always going over the edge. There's all it's always in movement. And yet we can have an idea somewhat deluded that it's fixed. Right? You know, we can think back of so we I was spent some time in New Mexico a couple of, well, pre-pandemic, at a place called Ojo Caliente outside Taos. And these it's this amazing collection of, I don't know, 12 hot springs pools, but behind the ground. And forgive me, I'm not remembering the name of the Native Americans that lived there, but there was a village there, and what was left were pot shards. And it was a whole thriving world. And you can walk around and pick up a pot shard. And just sort of like, okay, that's how that's happening with us too. And this way of being able to place ourselves in the flowing stream of life. And how if when we can get there on an embodied sense, there's like, okay. We're just kind of moving that back in the day, sort of that quote of like, you can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf. And part of that is like, okay, things are always moving. Can I align myself on a physical way as opposed to intellectually? Of, okay, can I get with this program of movement and then watching where we want to carve out exceptions? Like, oh, yeah, but not around this. This is working. I want to keep this here. Or the way we grasp and hold on. And I'm going to be reaching into Joseph's teachings a little bit today. But he was pointing to this nature when we really can land in a place of understanding all conditions that come together will then fall apart. He was like, well, once you get that, like everything that we want, we're going to lose. And he was like, well, then you just stop wanting things. I was like, wow, okay, that was a big step. But this note, and I've been thinking about this over the last couple of days. I'm like, huh, okay, if everything that I want to have, whether I'm blessed enough to have it right now or I'm leaning in the future wanting it, if I'm going to get it, I'm going to lose it. Okay, can that change the degree to which I hold on? I might not be in a place to release myself from ever wanting anything. I'm a greed type through and through. But being able to loosen up that expectation of, I'm going to lose it. Whether it's the relationship, it's the object, it's the time in my life, it's my health, whatever it is. Okay, build that in. It's always Mercury retrograde. Okay, things aren't going to work out. I'm going to lose it, whatever it is. And those of us living in the West, in fire, where the fires are so big, kind of building in like, well, do I just have the expectation that wherever I live, it's going to burn down? Am I going to lose everything at some point? Okay, that would be sad. It's likely. And building that in, the Zen master, whoever he was, had the quote of like this, the teacup, the precious, beautiful, ancient teacup, it's already broken. Okay. Can we love it knowing it will break? Can we love people knowing we're going to lose them, whether through death or just the the seasonality of relationships comes to an end. And how can we again lean into these truths as being liberatory? Because we know in the noble truths of their suffering in this realm, yeah, we know that the causes of the suffering is the degree to which we cling. We're wanting something or we're not wanting, pushing away. There's causes of this. And then this Eightfold Path allows us to interrupt the craving. Well, when we can start to really, again, from an embodied sense, understand, oh, all that I want to have, I'll lose. Can that then give me more space around how much how much I believe the grasping? If I get this one thing, then, and I mean, we know this, we hear it all the time, that this sort of the false belief, if we get the relationship, the job, the house, the mind state, then whew, I'll be great. There's sometimes that does work. Conditions are important. We don't lose the discernment about this condition I'm in didn't work. The marriage I was in was not serving me. It did not, was not to my benefit. Okay, so circumstances need to change. The conditions need to change. So it's not like we become like the seaweed in the ocean. We get to hold on to our agency and make choices ideally based on wisdom. Right. And one of the supports of our being able to move in a place of wisdom, stand upon wisdom, is this idea of, sweetie, all that comes into being will pass away. Given that truth, okay, then how do we want to respond? And how can we keep easing into these teachings that are saying, it's here. It's here right now. The past is gone. The future's not here yet. We're here. And we know back then, like what happened in the past, like, yeah, that's it, whatever. It's in the past. We know it's not there, but we can hold on to the future of like, yeah, but I can control it and make choices and make plans or not, as we learned intensely in the last couple of years. Yeah, go ahead and make plans. They're not going to happen. They're going to change. And this, again, releasing ourselves from an expectation of what's happening in the future is going to bring something about. It will, but we don't necessarily know what that is. Share a poem. This is by Liesl Mueller, called In Passing. How swiftly the strained honey of afternoon light flows into darkness, and the closed bud shrugs off its special mystery in order to break into blossom, as if what exists exists so that it can be lost and become precious. Right? So beautiful. As if what exists exists so that it can be lost and become precious. And that's the realm we're in. All that comes together, we have it and then we lose it. Okay, so let's pay attention and be here so we can appreciate the preciousness while we are engaged with it. We don't miss it. There's some quote, Anthony DeMilo, that's not the name, but sort of what's the point of practice? And I'm truncating and paraphrasing, but the idea of sort of to be able to be awake enough to notice when the sun is rising. The point of practice, to be awake enough to noticing what's happening here, to not be so encumbered by regrets and thinking about what happened in the past and perseverating back there, or so forward thinking into what's happening this afternoon or next week or 5 years from now that we miss, oh, it's this very moment, right? And Thich Nhat Hanh has the beautiful prayer of, I'm going to die and you're going to die. And what we have is this moment. Okay. There's truth there. Well, there's absolute truth there. Okay. And how can we, again, allow that to be feeding, nurturing the soil upon which we stand to then allow us to move in the world from a place of wisdom, given that truth? Okay. How do I want to show up in this moment? Because we don't know when our set of moments will come to an end. Yeah. And how to allow ourselves not to have to come too close to the edge when we get that diagnosis, to be like, oh God, I only have X amount of time. What do I want to do? We already know where this goes. We die. Okay, so how then, again, using this as a motivation to just embrace all that's here, some of which is beautiful and wonderful, and some of it is terrible. Okay. Finding our way there and allowing ourselves to relax into the practice to help us find freedom. This quote from, I'm going to mispronounce his name, forgive me, Dzogchen Khyentso Rinpoche. The potential for realization, for awakening, is universal and present for all of us. True benefit will come from your own efforts in realization. For your efforts to bring benefit, you must take your life into your own hands and examine your mind and experience. From this point of view, no one can be kinder to you than yourself, and nobody could have a greater effect on you or actually do more for you than yourself. The Buddha said, I have shown you the path of liberation, and now liberation depends on you. This is true. If you don't take your life into your own hands, not even the Buddhas can make a difference. It's up to you. And in allowing ourselves to take our own lives into our own hands, to take our own mind into our hands, it's like that, the instructions of the meditation, like, let's just watch. What's the mind do? Is what the mind is doing to our benefit? Is it onward leading to a place of ease? Or is it totally stressing me out? And being able to find moments of pause such that we can make choices. Well, this isn't helping me. And sometimes that's impossible. It seems impossible. We can get so spun out. It might take an hour or a day or many days to wake up from, do I need to keep thinking this? Okay. And then there's choices. But this empowerment of taking our lives in our own hands for our own liberation. And I'm using the word liberation in this moment, that it's not out there. If we practice X number of hours a day, we're going to get to the promised land. Maybe. I mean, may it be so. But really being able to hold on to, it's this moment. That liberation is possible in this moment because we can see through the conditioning of the mind, the habits of the mind, the ways in which the intricacy and entanglements of the mind, like, this is a big mess. I cannot do this. I can do something else with my mind. I can practice with the Brahma Viharas, with the phrases of loving kindness or equanimity. I have choice. In this, in Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, in the epilogue, he writes, the only requirement for reaching the final goal of liberation, part two, to start and to continue. If these requirements are met, there is no doubt the goal will be attained. This is the Dhamma, the undeviating law. And I love this. And it's so funny because 3 pages earlier in this book, he talked about, it might take you 7 lifetimes to do this. So we take the long view. It might not be tomorrow, it might be 5 lifetimes down the line, but this idea of to start and continue, it will come. This is the universal law. I find that so, I take so much joy in that of like, okay, it's coming. Maybe, maybe in this lifetime, maybe in another, whether you believe in multiple lifetimes is not important. It's just more the belief of it counts. The practice counts, the practice, the commitment, the showing up, the effort. As you all show week after week in coming here, there's benefit. And can we pay attention to where it bears fruit? Whether it's catching it in a moment like, oh, I don't need to say that thought I have in my head out loud. I can keep it quiet. That pause, that moment, oh, there's choice. Yeah. Yeah. Impermanence, we get into a groove of our lives and even a groove of our meditation, like we, as if we know what, how it's going to go, and we can get complacent. And it takes our energy and our activation, our curiosity, our investigation to what's actually happening here. How do we really stay and have that sense of invigoration and curiosity? And part of it is holding close that we're all near the razor's edge of dying, but allowing that to be the fire kind of beneath us to keep us engaged. You know, the end of birth is death. Our life is getting shorter and shorter, and we're all in the queue. These are words from Joseph. We're only going in one direction. So how can we allow that to be a motivation for us to stay awake and connected. This is from James Baldwin. Perhaps the whole root of our trouble, the human trouble, is that we will sacrifice all the beauty of our lives, we'll imprison ourselves in totems, taboos, crosses, blood sacrifices, steeples, mosques, races, armies, flags, nations, in order to deny the fact of death, which is the only fact we have. It seems to me that one ought to rejoice in the fact of death, ought to decide, indeed, to earn one's death by confronting the passion, the conundrum of life. One is responsible to life. It is a small beacon in a terrifying darkness from which we come and from which we return. One must negotiate this passage as nobly as possible for the sake of those who are coming after us. Right? All the things we get ourselves entangled in this idea that it will somehow stave off the inevitable end. And this might not be conscious. And again, the teachings invite us to, hey, what are you actually doing? Can we look at the conditions, the habits, the hindrances, those things that obscure the natural radiance of the heart and the mind, that which obscures our Buddha nature? Right? That's our birthright. And then we kind of muck it up a little bit through our own delusion and greed and ignorance. Okay. And the Buddha's saying, hey, check it out. We can move that away and clear the path such that we can find in this moment, in the next moment, a sense of ease and clear seeing. So how about you close your eyes? Not a lot of words. And just notice how the body is, what landed, what didn't. Kind of allowing your attention to come off the computer screen back into your own form. And I'm going to come back to Thich Nhat Hanh's words and just to see, to check in how the words resonate. And I'll say them and ask you to say them to yourself quietly. I'm totally, it is blank. I'm going to die and you're going to die. And what we have is this moment. This is true. This is a truth. There are not many absolute truths, but I'm going to die and you're going to die. And what we have is this moment. So then what? If we allow ourselves to abide in this truth, all that is born will die. All that arises passes away. All that comes together comes apart. What we have is this moment. Here in our beautiful women's sangha and in our lives outside the sangha, what we have is this moment. Given this truth, what do we want to do with it? How do we want to show up? And we're all in different stages of our lives and different conditions, and some of us are in places that are blessed and beautiful, and some of us are in situations that are just brutal and hard. Yes, right. And still, can we allow ourselves to feel into the agency that is our birthright to choose how do we want to respond given this universal truth? I'm going to die. You're going to die. What we have is this moment. Begs the question again, how do we want to show up in this moment? And just letting that question kind of linger. Given this truth, how do we want to show up? And just to see what comes. And there may be a pushback, some aversion. Okay. Allowing there to be space enough for the myriad of responses that collectively may come up. Letting go of any judgment or opinions about what we should be doing, but just allowing there to be an opening into the heart's desire, given this truth. How do we want to live? How do we want to embrace and stay awake for this one precious life, this very moment? And what might it be like to allow yourself to live from that place ongoingly, moment to moment? So I'm going to stop there and thank you so much for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.